and welcome to the Tech and Toast podcast. We simplify the way you buy and manage your hospitality tech. You can click through to techontoast.community where you can search our marketplace, attend our events, grab your free tech audit, and we will help you visualize your tech stack as you grow into 2024. Meanwhile, summer in Australia.
Hey, Louis, do you think we should sponsor the Tech on Toast podcast? I mean, I really like Chris and I really like what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's a ripper idea, LP. It's a perfect fit for what we do at Red Cat.
I mean, I agree. I'm just not sure how we get our message across around, like, Red Cat specializing in multi-site groups, you know, like cafe groups and fast casual groups and QSRs and all that.
Maybe we mention some of our customers like Nando's in Australia, New Zealand, the restaurants at the Aussie Open, Boost Juice International. I mean, they've got over 700 sites.
Hang on. I think that was the sponsors. This is the Tech on Toast podcast. Enjoy the show.
Cool. Welcome to the next episode of the Tech on Toast podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Luke Bevon, CEO at SumUp. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you good? Yeah, I'm good. Welcome to BrewDog.
Yeah, very nice.
Have you been here before?
No, and I used to work quite close to here. So this whole area, I think, is new. This part of Waterloo Station, I think, is...
Yeah, it's mental. And they're knocking down... I'm pointing, so no one can see this because we're on a podcast. But they're knocking down all that wall over there, so it's going to be all exposed. So you'll be able to see the Thames. And, well, not the Thames, but pretty much that way.
Nice.
So it's going to be huge. It's a huge business. And tell me a little bit about you. Where are you from? What do you do?
So I'm CEO at SumUp UK, which is the UK entity of SumUp, which is a global firm. I've been with SumUp for 3 years. I was part of a small point of sale company called GoodTeal, which was acquired by SumUp 3 years ago, and I was there for about 3 years before.
There's a pattern.
Other than that, I've worked in SaaS businesses for 15, 20 years. Also have an alternative life.
Oh, yeah? Tell me about that.
As a touring drum and bass DJ.
Really?
Yeah.
You're the second DJ I've had on today.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone's a DJ.
A Dutch techno DJ. From Piggy.
Oh, right.
So he's very hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't... I've always been quite close to hospitality because I used to run club nights 20 years ago at university. And I just... make music and DJ as my second life.
My very first event when I came out of ops was in a drum and bass nightclub.
Really?
In the Steel Yard under London,
London
Bridge.
I've played a few times.
Great venue.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah,
so how the hell have you ended up doing... What came first, the drum and bass or the sass?
Drum and bass has been part of my life for over 20 years. It's at university, really. It's DJing. Then made music. The whole time, about 10, 11 years ago, started touring a bit, used to work a bit part-time, I was DJing a lot up till COVID, and then at that point sort of switched a bit more back into work, but I still absolutely love it. Where am I playing? Lafayette on Friday.
It's nice.
A new club. Vienna last weekend and Bristol.
Making me feel shit.
And some of them are very good about it because the main office is in Berlin.
Right.
As you imagine, everyone in Berlin's a DJ.
Yeah.
Literally.
That's where they all live, in it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's regular sort of Thursday. The office is amazing there. Like Thursday, they have a rooftop and someone from the company is always DJing. I think I'm the only...
Have you got a regular slot there?
No. To be honest with you, I'm surprised. I tend to keep it quite separate, but it's sort of converged.
Yeah, I love it. My brother's 3 years older than me. I won't tell you how old I am, but he's 3 years older than me, and he's still a pirate DJ for a station that shouldn't exist.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And he's 54, 53. And we were talking the other day, and it's mental. I said, are you not getting too old for this? Because he's drum and bass as well. He's like, no, I'm enjoying it more as I get older.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I mean, I'm like, when I'm out and about, I'm like, wow, the people here are closer to my daughter's age than my age. But like, I still absolutely love it. It's still a very important part of my life.
Love that.
I'm lucky that I have an employer that's understanding of
until
that, really.
Until now.
And they're really cool about it. In fact, one of the founders at SumUp, when I played in Berlin, he came out and... Yeah, I was telling him to go home.
Well, I did not think this was going to go this way
when I played in Berlin.
Love it.
But I'm probably more... I could know a little bit more about drum and bass than SumUp. So
let's just do drum and bass then.
We'll try our best.
But you must have seen a change, though. Think about it. So how long... You were GoodTeal, 6 years ago now, then,
yes.
I suppose, at the start of GoodTeal. And you must have seen such a shift, I suppose, just in the technology generally, from there to now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think... One of the reasons I joined GoodTeal, it was actually via someone I used to work with, was an investor in it, and I knew some of the people that had founded the company, and one of the things I liked about it was that it already had like a quite modern view or a forward-thinking approach to sort of hospitality technology. Even back then, it was looking at sort of click and collect and order and pay on your phone, and that is
pre that stuff. Well, as that stuff was being born, right?
Yeah, and basically, like candidly, it's the reason why the company survived COVID, because we had a model where we were very, very like merchant first.
Yeah.
And we realized that people paid us subscriptions and suddenly they were shut. So we were like, we can't take money off these businesses. They've got no income, but then we've got no income and we've not got a whole lot of cash left in the bank. But we were like, look, if anyone needs support, we'll do it. We had some furlough support, went down to a really, really bare bones amount of like staff just to get through, just to cover the businesses that were open. But we had developed, or Animesh, who was the CTO, had developed this sort of click and collect order, like QR based ordering, suddenly become massive, and we had a head start and just gave it away to our merchants. They started using it, and it just about brought in enough cash to get us through. And then, less than a year later, we joined part of SumUp, and it was a pretty crazy year.
I imagine.
And you know what, like, everything comes back to COVID, and I really hope, like, every conversation, like, but it's just such
it was such a negative thing in a lot of ways, but also, I mean, everyone says this, that, you know, a lot of good stuff, a lot of opportunity came out of it, didn't they? My dad said to me years ago, every crisis brings opportunity. There's a chance to do something new, right? And it's just, sometimes there's some horrible stuff before it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of hospitality tech, it forced through some adoption of stuff that had been bubbling under like this, and I think some of it was embraced. I think some of it, understandably, there was some resistance.
Yeah.
Like a restaurant near where I live, they always done a lot of stuff, always quite forward thinking. A Canteen in Chelmsford, I'll give them a nod.
Hope they're listening.
Yeah, but they know what they did. They did, like, they had the restaurant, they had a bar, they'd do music events, they'd do everything to sort of make the most of the space. Yeah. And they're very technologically savvy. But they adapted and pivoted to doing sort of collection. That was never their thing, right?
Yeah.
They always was a service-based restaurant, and they felt that delivery was very, like, impersonal. But they had to adapt, and they tried new technologies, and they're very, very forward-thinking about it, some sort of loyalty platforms, just to be visible. And some venues really ran with this, and some more went back to traditional services. And I think it's good that they've got an option. As you say, like, it's... that sometimes it becomes a catalyst for change. Some of it can be good, some of it can be bad. But I think now, if you're a hospitality business, I think you have a lot of options, so you can ultimately serve your customers how you want to. And be that a lot of people go cashless.
Yeah.
Some people are quite resistant to that because they've, for various reasons, and that's their choice. And I think as a sum up, our sort of role is to enable businesses to have the choice and serve them.
And that's what I was going to say. So if I had to kind of paint a picture of your customer, are you really focused on early entrepreneur businesses, or are you covering a vast array now of customers?
Yeah, so SumUp traditionally was really, really for small businesses, like the small of the small.
My friend uses you. He runs a really successful, actually, this weekend, pumpkin patch in Cardiff.
Seasonal businesses.
Cleans up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what, like, really, really entrepreneurial, but certainly at the nano and micro level, we'd consider it. So before you'd even get into sort of limited companies, and certainly SumUp operates in, you know, over 30 markets just all across the world, and in Brazil it might look different to what it does in the UK.
Yeah.
But it was initially for giving services to those that couldn't afford to have, like, a big monthly contract with payment terminals, very much about that sort of persona. But as it's developed, and certainly in the UK, it's become more focused on sort of the SMB, or it has that part of its product set. That would be sort of point of sales, kiosks, which we've got one over here, I think, in BrewDog, which I think is something that we've
got. Top left, yeah.
Yeah, we've got business accounts, you have a free MasterCard if you don't have other banking, which is a good option. So it shifted towards, like, a bigger, a more... established business, I suppose.
I was going to say, and you guys actually understand the essence of hospitality, don't you? Because without being sound rude to your competitors, I suppose, but because you were, or still focus on those real earthy startups. You just talking about business then, they're trying to make every bit of square footage matter in their business, because that was, you know, it's important to them. And I think that gives you, does it give you a better perspective of what they want, I suppose, what hospitality needs in terms of tech instead of kind of just presuming. The optics are different, right? Because you're working with new starts.
Yeah, and I think one of the changing phases of Sum Up has been, for instance, the acquisition of Good Till, which was really, really merchant-focused, very much... the majority of staff had come from some sort of hospitality
background.
I
think
background.
You do the food markets in Newport and Barry.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what they're called now.
Called? I can't think
Good
what they're
Shed.
Called.
Good Shed.
Yeah, yeah. So they, I think they initially had sort of the click and collect.
That's
maybe
right, yeah.
The table ordering.
Because they popped up around the pandemic, the Barry one anyway. Yeah. But weird, but I know a guy who runs a restaurant called The Sausage Revolution.
Okay.
It exists. Which is weirdly, it's in a bin yard in Barry. It sounds horrific, doesn't it? But he does great business. I'm sure he uses you guys.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm sure.
Newport Market. I mean, I used to know, at one stage, I'd know all of our customers, but it's a bit bigger than that now. You're part of Sum Up. But one of the things that it did, it bought Sum Up a UK team, UK customer service team, customer success. Yeah. And all very, very close to the market. And we know that we're strong in hospitality. We've got good suite of products. And yeah, a lot of our staff have had experience. They've even had their own businesses. And that was one of the reasons for a lot of our recruitment. So we feel that it's evolving Sum Up as an organization, certainly in the SMB sector, to be towards hospitality. In the nano and micro, it's still very popular with, say, with taxi drivers and as your friend, like seasonal businesses.
Pumpkin man.
Christmas. I remember like I get a Christmas tree delivered every year, and he's a Sum Up. My barber's now Sum Up, which is it's a broad range, but I definitely say that hospitality in the UK is one of our strengths.
Oh, what's it like for you, I suppose? So what was the infrastructure like at Good Till? Was it
it was a big shift, right? We would cram into a tiny office in London Bridge. And now, we're part of a...
Now you've got a big posh one.
Yeah, a big posh one in Covent Garden. And there's Sum Up offices in Berlin, Paris, Milan, Barcelona, Boulder in the States, Sao Paulo. So it's been a big expansion for the people. And to be fair, like 90% of those that were here when it was a Good Till, still there at Sum Up 3 years
That's
later,
great.
which is cool. I think it's a good, nice place to work. And Sum Up is very entrepreneurial in its approach. And it also... really tries to empower what we had before as a very small business, because obviously a business with 25 staff is different to 3,000 staff.
Yes.
But we try and keep the essence to it. We don't always get it perfectly right, but it's a nice place to work.
Yeah, but your character, I've only met you for like 15 minutes and already I think I'd like to work for you. No, you know what I mean? Like, you're just...
I wonder if the team say that, yeah.
No, they're all listening going, no way, mate, you don't know him. But like, and what do you think the biggest issues hospitality... I know we talked about the pandemic a little bit and I think things have shifted a little bit, not loads, since then. But what major obstacles are they facing, I suppose, operators, when you guys get to see them, when you get to talk to them? Are they still suffering? Is it people stuff, or is it still all the headwinds and the costs, or is it all of the above?
Yeah, I think obviously the cost of running a business right now has increased significantly, be it from your utilities, your staff, and I think a lot of venues are struggling to staff appropriately, find the quality of staff that they want to deliver service that they think is of a high standard. So I think that, also there's an obvious concerns with cost of living and how that affects the economy and how that affects people's disposable income. And obviously one thing that might drop is the expense on, let's say, premium coffees, which we're probably all guilty of spending a little bit more than we should on. So they're facing those headwinds. And I think, and the other thing is, I think tipping legislation is due to change.
Yes.
And there's things like that are there that exist. We do find that in the UK that merchants are more cost conscious.
Yep.
Conscious. So, I mean, for instance, the average price that merchants are paying to process transactions is dropping. And we're seeing, like, candidly, in Sum Up, we're seeing competition from our players that are reducing the rates, and we're realizing that we have to offer better value.
Is payments becoming, like, I'm speaking to a lot of my partners who come on the podcast, and payments seems to be becoming a bit of a battlefield. Like, you know, there's a lot of people a lot of the POS guys are moving into that field.
Yeah, so POS guys are moving into payments, which I think makes sense for
me
a lot
too.
Of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got the merchant
they
there.
They make more money than just selling POS.
And so you've got there's a double pressure on payments. One is the cost of payments has increased, like the actual cost, even to Sum Up at the bank level. Some of that's like post-Brexit, where international cards, there's additional levies, and it just means our cost base is increasing just to process transactions. And then there's pressure from competition, and there's some really strong competition.
Yeah.
some of them have changed their sales model to go out into merchants, almost like a door-to-door selling, and say, hey, we can make it cheaper for you. And understandably, it's quite commoditized.
Yeah.
If it's cheaper, well, it does practically the same thing. So like, we understand that. At sum up, we think we're trying to be considerate to that, and we've looked, and you can see that we've lowered our prices for a lot of our merchants just across the board. We have other propositions around. We've tested slight subscriptions with a lower rate. We've also added things like point of sale invoicing to our product portfolio to try and avoid a complete race to the bottom with prices, because I think ultimately then what that means is that everyone has to cut corners with their merchant services.
Yeah.
So we're trying to keep it so we can offer added value. So say UK service team, CSM team, and just the support for venues. And I think there's a balance. There's some venues just absolutely want the lowest processing cost that they can, and that's fine. Some of them see the value in having the support with building the point of sale.
And there is value there, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
Like that. And I think that's when we did something at Prime Minister just during the pandemic. We never really looked at our credit card payments or, you know, bank fees or whatever. Just hadn't. You know, it was just on a line on the P&L, and we decided, me and the CFO, to pick it apart one year, or that summer. Oh my God. I mean, we were paying people for paying people, right? It was a mess. It was so ugly underneath. And I don't think operators really, or some operators in some deals, that they don't really see how much they could be saving, not just in terms of a lower fee, but in terms of the service they get and what they're paying for, because we were paying for all sorts. We didn't know
about. Yeah, and I think like what some of that, and I think it's changing. There's a change in regulations in the UK with the payment service regulator, which means it should be transparent.
Some more transparent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, SumUp has always been inherently transparent, very, very clear. This is what you pay. There's no hidden fees for chargebacks.
Do you know what I mean? It was more through, I hate to say it, but Worldpay and
that's sort of traditional model. Yeah. And I think that like someone like us, Zettel, even Dojo recently, you see a lot. Like they've really, really upset the Apple cart the payments cart. And brought a bit more transparency and visibility and lower rates. So I think what SumUp has always done is be really, really transparent. So it's very, very clear what you're going to get charged. There shouldn't be any surprises. No like fixed fees here or there, chargeback fees. So that's one way that we can, at least we can be consistent with the merchant. But I think what we know for hospitality venues, for instance, and cashless is, I mean, it's sometimes a bit of a dirty word. I mean, I'm very much, look, if I was to open a hospitality venue tomorrow, it would absolutely be cashless.
All day. These guys were the first to do it in BrewDog. James told me that they did it down in Canary Wharf. Oh, no, in the banking district somewhere. And he just said at the time it just made total sense. And that was pre-pandemic, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I remember Bath Rugby was a point of sale, Good Till customer.
That's right, yeah.
And they still are, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. But like they were, so they would have a game on, say, a Sunday, and they'd finish cashing up on a Tuesday, because they just like they had all these tills dotted round, and there'd be a bit of variables, and you'd obviously have temporary staff that would just be there for the day, and maybe there would be trust issues.
I love the way you frame that.
And then suddenly they were cashed up within an hour of the game. It was done. They could do it because it was cashless on the POS.
Yeah.
They had like, think of the labour savings
and also the transparency of what they're taking, right?
Because that
would take days to work out whether you made whatever.
And they can do it. They can just look at their phone at half time and see exactly what it's done. And we have a lot of big stadium customers.
Yeah, because and that's the thing. All the feature-led stuff, all the pretty stuff, all the big noise everyone makes, it really comes down to speed and transparency, right, I think, with POS. I just think that, I know you need some feature-rich stuff if you're an enterprise or whatever you want to do, but I think being able to see quickly what you're doing in terms of performance and then also be able to process your customers quickly is, I suppose, the most important thing.
Yeah, completely. And I think one of the things, and be candid about SumUp, so in 2020, late 2021 till probably the middle of last year, we were struggling to keep up with the speed demands of our merchants. With the point of sale, and we sold into food markets that would have a lunchtime rush, stadiums that have a half-time rush. And one thing that SumUp, coming from a nano and micro business where, I don't know, it'd be a taxi or it might be a construction firm, and they might do one payment a week.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it takes 20 seconds rather than 3 seconds because they're processing the payment. But with your I don't know, like Curb, Seven Dials, which sits under our market, our office, which is a food market, lots of food stalls with a centralised seating bit. They've just got to get them all in and get turning the service around. So the payments just need to be quick, and seconds make a difference. So put a lot of work in ensuring that our readers were a lot faster. So they'd go from, I mean, you're going from like 8 seconds to 4 seconds. But it really makes a difference when someone's waiting there.
Well, that's half the time you're waiting, right?
Yeah, and then it just needs to be reliable. So that's what a lot of our focuses have been, and we've definitely improved significantly to the point where we're now confident, as is for hospitality venues, we can offer sort of best in class in a lot of fields. And it's a very competitive landscape. There's some really, really good.
It's crazy. There's so many these days, so many.
And a lot of them are very good. And often it would be the service that you can add in, and I suppose if it's POS, the setup we can do to ensure that it just works for your venue.
It always interests me. We're at the trade show, Hospitality Tech trade show, a couple of weeks ago, and I counted 28 POS stands in that zone.
It's crazy.
And I was just like, if you're an operator and you're walking in now and you want POS, I just turn around and walk back out. How do they select? I mean, it's one of the things that we do, right? We're not taking on any more POS companies onto our marketplace because I think we have 10. Yeah. And I think 10's enough, right? For people
plenty.
You guys are one of them. It's enough for someone to have a look around and have a look and feel, listen to the podcast with you or whoever, right? And make their decision, like you said. And they're all very good. They all offer nuances, I suppose, that are slightly different. But how are they making their decisions? Is it really down to cost?
Yeah, I think there's a number of variables. You get your very, very cost-conscious merchants, especially with POS. And sometimes, I mean, like, so our premium point of sale starts at, say, £29 a month.
Bargain.
And it's well-priced. You can add some modules on. And really, like, we, at the very basic level, we believe that delivers value for the business in the reporting, employee management, everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
But you get your cost conscious, where actually there's some good free point of sales out there. Like we have what is a point of sale light, which is much more basic. If you have, I don't know, up to sort of 20 products with not major variables, it's something that works extremely well. But the more products you have, the more variances, the more value you get out of a point of sale. To give an example of, I don't know, take the bar here. You could have a simple offer where it just has, say, 5 beers on taps and bottles and maybe a house spirit in a mixer. And you can probably get away with quite a simple POS. But once you get more complex drinks in there, cocktails, mixers, and you want to know, you can have ingredient management. So, you know, okay, for this cocktail, we know we're going to use 50 mils of this spirit, a bit of this, and you can keep that managed. Yeah. And really, like, if you see value in that, then there's a lot of great point of sale options out there. And I think that we are one that are premium, but we're not priced like an enterprise solution. We're sort of priced still in the SMB, but you can run, I mean, say, Aviva Stadium, O2 Arena, big venues run off our point of sale system.
And that's high volume, right? High pressure moments, isn't it? That's like, you know, everyone goes at the same time, right?
Yeah, and we've got our kiosk, our sort of self-ordering units, Aston Villa now, and I mean, like the...
Let's not talk about them, but yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I mean, like, it was quite cool, like, so it's quite funny, Aston Villa, and so when we were testing them out, So it's a speed, right? So people want, they got 15, 20 minutes to get their beer. Some of them might want to get 2 beers in that time. So they've got to be able to roll them out. So you've got the screen where you can place the order, and then you can collect the pipes.
So they literally put them in pressure points.
Yes, yeah, so they put them in the really busy concourses, and as like football fans as well, they can be quite adverse to change. Not necessarily the most tech savvy, right? So they come in and they're like, oh, I just
That's
like
a demographic you don't want to sell to.
So we tested them out for a few sort of half times, and we'd speak to the actual, like, the ticket holders, and at first they're like, no, I'm not using that technology. Why would I just want to get my pint? But then they realise they can press the button there, and then the pint's just there for the bar, and they can, if they want to get two in at half time.
Yeah.
That they can now do that, and it's really a real good test of your system. A football stadium where, I mean, a concourse.
Yeah, and adopting change in 15 minutes break, right? Or teaching people to adopt change in 15 minutes is not easy.
No,
most restaurant chains struggle with that for years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what that did for us is, so that's a real, obviously, sort of enterprise style customer, and that comes from Goodteal. Goodteal had a relationship with a lot of stadiums. And what we did at SumUp is we challenged ourselves, okay, we can deliver to this sort of this customer, then our ambition is to provide that service to sort of the whole SMB. So if we can get a stadium customer happy, super, super demanding, then hopefully your coffee shops, your restaurants, your other quick service venues are going to be also happy with our solution. So we sort of just try to raise it up. if we can keep them happy, then hopefully we can keep all our merchants happy.
And it's interesting, like the data you get from, so I was my pumpkin man, I was saying to, when I was chatting to him, I'm seeing like I'm obsessed with him, but I was there at the weekend and I'm just interested. He used to work for me as a chef and he's taken so much money. He's done like 150K, probably shouldn't have said that on the podcast, over like 2 weeks tax man, if you're listening. But I was saying to him, you're doing it again next year. He's like, yeah, but you don't know what you did. As in, you know your total sales for each day, but you can't segment that. You can't tell how many people, what time they hit and all this kind of stuff. Because he's got very basic. I can't remember what it was. It's like you explained, very entry level. He's got like five items.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have much data. Now, it's absolutely crucial about the data side of things. Is that something you develop over time with you guys, or does it depend on the module you buy?
The Pro Point of Sale has really, really well established reporting that you can set up exactly how you want. You can look at time of day, products, variants. You can really set it up to be able to analyze the data in the way you see fit. But even the most basic products, you'd be able to say, okay, you sold this, and then you could look at
10, 30, 25 people bought a pumpkin.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're pumpkin man, I think for next year, you want to know next year, okay.
I'm just going to introduce them to you. I'm sick of talking about it.
My kids absolutely love it. They went to one local in Essex, I think. So, I mean, they obviously do a roaring trade because they just put the pumpkins out, don't they?
The farmer rents the field out. Yeah. He sticks all the pumpkins in it, obviously charges them a premium for that. And then my mate runs all the food for it. So he's got four trailers all the ancillary stuff. And then his best mate runs the... They have 1,200 cars every 5 hours.
Wow.
Which is insane.
Yeah, so they're just turning over. And
for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pumpkins.
Yeah, I was reminding... I think I went away for Halloween in Kent a couple of years ago and the one that had all the food trucks there.
Oh, yeah. They've got live music, bar. So they're very smart. They've turned it into... So people in the evening, the adults that go don't care about... They don't even pick a pumpkin up. They just go and get hammered in a field.
And that's sort of like modern like hospitality. It's really, really popular, this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost like mini festivals.
Well, people are not bored, I suppose, but people are looking for, I think, experiential side of hospitality. I think it's quite exciting. It's changed, you know, with Flight Club and all these other guys doing competitive socialising. Then on the restaurant side, going out for dinner, as it would be now, you know, having like a dinner in a mid-market venue, is kind of an occasional thing more than it used to be. And then I think people are looking for those outside activities where they can go to a field and pick pumpkins or go down the beach and have something outside the beach. Or I think that's really growing, and it's a lovely part of the industry that isn't really developed yet, or it hasn't finished developing yet.
Yeah, and I think also the standard of foods you get at the food truck has gone up immeasurably from when it just, I don't know, you go to, I mean, my
I used to call them
festival.
The death burgers at 3 a.m. in Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, I think at my uni they used to be called rat burgers, because that's how much, like,
where did you go?
University of East Anglia.
Right, okay, I'll stay clear of that.
But this is, and I imagine now it's all completely gentrified.
It'd be really, vegan really options and all sorts. Even when you can't see at 3 a.m, you'll be accommodated on your diet of choice.
I get to play at various music festivals around Europe, and it, like, the standard of food there is now, because they have these food trucks that all year round will be, I don't know, situated in the local market, and then they'll pivot up and they'll do festivals. And I was speaking to one of our customers this morning, Gorilla Events, and they do glass, they sort of pitch to big companies. So
that's how Prime Minister started. We were doing pies in Glastonbury. Okay.
I think I definitely would have seen you at Glastonbury in a few places.
Until very recently they stopped around 2021, 2022 maybe, but they were doing it for years before that. But they do all the other festivals as well, pitch up and just shift pie.
And I think the local restaurants where I live, they also now have like a truck on the high street that would be there just during the day, just sort of selling a basic style of their menu. So I suppose as your business, you're really optimizing what you do.
It's so smart, isn't it? Like, I go back in the day when I was doing, you know, we're at Carluccio's, we had like a deli and we had the main restaurant, and then we did pop-up shops in the winter for Christmas, for panettone and all this kind of stuff. And you kind of thought then, do you know, why aren't more people doing e-commerce? Why aren't more people doing pop-up shops? And then, as you say, everything got speeded up over the pandemic. Everyone realised there was a business to be had online, and then off we go.
Yeah, and I think I still, when I see one that's like, doesn't take cards, and I'm not just saying this because I as part of my living, I'm always surprised, and I do ask them, I'm like, why are you just cash? And you get various reasons.
I'm guessing most of it is for dodging. No?
Yeah. I mean, that would be my guess at a certain point.
My local takeaway, I won't name them.
Definitely.
They haven't taken a card for months.
And I'm always like, look, just like, the amount of people that won't come, like, because they haven't got cash on you. Think how much that is on a day. Just test it for a month and see how much your takings go up. And it'd be really
It was weird because it used to be, oh, if people haven't got, you know, we've got to make sure we've got cash because people, but now I don't, I mean, I just don't carry it. I mean, me personally, I just don't, I love it here. I order, if I'm sitting on my own, I go with the QR code, I order my food, it rocks up. If I want to go to a bar, I just do it from the table. It's great.
Yeah, no, I totally. I actually much prefer ordering on my device because I feel if a waiter comes to me or waitress, I ask my wife, I make terrible decisions under pressure. Like, why did I order that? Whereas I'm on my phone.
Was that connected to your wife or was that just when she's there?
Well, and I get food envy because I'm like, I wasn't ready. Whereas, take your time, check the menu properly. Okay, order this. What is strange though, the kind of global headquarters of SumUp is in Berlin.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different landscape. It's like still 55% cash, something like that.
Yeah, I was talking to Charles from Paytronics. He was over doing a podcast, and he was saying in the States they've all switched straight back to cash.
Yeah,
cash is king there. Like, yes. And he said weirdly, he said, "Oh, I come here, it's so odd. No one has cash." And I'm like, "Yeah, it's just weird. I don't. Each market's different, but I think the States is about service and tips and very much based around that."
And I think one of the things we've got operations in the US. We've got a platform, a loyalty platform called Five Stars, which is about. Having customer loyalty, so you'd enter your phone number, which is much more prevalent in America. We're going to launch it in the UK early next year, and I think people will be more comfortable with emails, but we'll test it on phone numbers. Yeah. So you do it, and then you'd get offers from local venues, and it's called a growth point of sale. But yeah, you do have the tipping element in the States because it's such a substantial part of
it's a profession, right? And it's really. Well, I lived over there for a bit when I worked for Hard Rock, and it's a given, right, that you get tipped. That's going to happen. And how much you make on that tip is depending on how good your service is, obviously. And the cash was crucial.
Yeah.
And they made up most of these guys. Well, it does here as well, right, but it's more prevalent over there.
Yeah, and I don't – last time I was there, you still get a lot of signing for credit cards rather than chip and pin. I think it started to change with Apple
Pay. They used to disappear with you. I'm like, hey, where are you going?
Well, I think it's 2000 – when it would be about 2014, I was in California and my card got skimmed obviously while I was there, and someone completely maxed out my credit card across the other side because they take it away and it's
take it around the corner, hand it to their mate, come back, go here again.
Yeah, but I think with Apple Pay now, it would be an Apple and it being a US product, I think that's changed a bit of the adoption. But you also spoke to Tipjar on this,
I
really like that company. I spoke to James a few times,
yeah, he's very cool. And he talked about his Twitter story probably, I think, on that pod when he sued Twitter because they stole his name.
Oh, right, okay.
It's a good story. When he's in here probably today at some point, so I'm sure you'll bump into
him. But obviously, they're trying to crack that thing with digital tips. And what I think in the UK, it'll become like a really, really important part is where.
Oh, yeah.
Because at the that is the one thing, right? So with card payments, unless they take the tip on the as part of the payment flow, which we do with one of our readers, you can add the tip with our solo reader. It can become an issue because it's like, oh, I haven't got cash, how do I tip? So I think this sort of digital wallet that you could pay it straight to the staff, I think will be the next step.
Well, it's that transparency piece again, isn't it? It's about to be able to say, look, I gave you this, I want it to go to him or her because they looked after me. And I think I spent years in the industry, I mean, from cashing up the coins on the table and literally giving each a little pile of money each, all the way through to firing people for not following the steps on the credit card machine. You know, I didn't do it, but that was happening, you know, when waiters would skip. So they could get the cash rather than on the card. So it's been absolute. I mean, when James talks on the podcast, he talked about the fact that he wish, you know, it's be careful what you wish for when you get into those kind of things, because he said it's an absolute minefield, you know, so complex.
Yeah, but I think that sort of is like the next level of adoption. And one thing that someone thinks in 5-10 years is that there's a possibility that if funds are flowing between sort of more consumer wallets, so say you're tipping, you pay by card, it goes to your staff's wallet, and then they can go and spend it in other merchants, is the concept of then payment fees will almost disappear because it'd just be all sort of open banking in between digital wallets. And at that point, payments potentially becomes free. And that's what SumUp is sort of preparing itself for. And then it really is the sort of service layer on top. It's the point of sale, it's the loyalty offering, the business accounts and the wallets. And even like the consumer, like the sort of marketplace, which you've got your Deliveroos and your Uber Eats, which do it on that sort of basis. But there's not really anyone that's necessarily cracked it at a sort of coffee shop level where you look at your I don't know, if it's SumUp Pay or some sort of wallet, and you'd be like, okay, here's my 10 coffee shops around here that take this sort of payment, and this is how well they're reviewed. So there is a interesting future for it all.
And I was going to ask you that as we come towards the end here. What do you think about... I mean, that's a really interesting angle to go on, isn't it? Because I also agree with you. I think the wallets will end up working together. They're already doing it. They're on the cusp of it now, aren't they?
Yes.
And I think that's going to happen more and more. And I think that it's, again, about adoption, isn't it? And the fact that people are adopting that habit and that technique everywhere. And the customers will hold the key to everything, right? The minute we start behaving in a certain way. And tech normally wants to be ahead of that curve. But I think on this particular thing, the wallets are literally generating their own little world.
Yeah, and I think you think that every individual can have their wallet that sort of acts as an intermediary with their like sort of core traditional bank account. Money comes in, they spend money, and then you have an ecosystem where there's not necessarily card payments that it can remove that element of cost that goes to Visa, MasterCard at the moment. And then that makes the payments free, and then it becomes more about, okay, how can you keep your...
Yeah, what benefits do we get from working with you or
I think like that. I see like this ecosystem of technology where it starts from allowing your sort of customers to order how they want. So they can either do it on their device, they can do it in person, and then you take the order, you fulfill the order with your kitchen display screens or whatever technology you've got to get it to there, you deliver the service to the customer, you then can concentrate on delivering, I don't know, excellent service, depending on what you're... If you quick
It'd be nice to end up there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, restaurant. And then get to the point where then the tips go to a wallet and then they go back and spend it at other venues like yours. And
love it.
It's an ecosystem.
But that's the dream. And listen, what does the future hold for you? Obviously, more drum and bass gigs.
Yes, hopefully. I mean,
I'll get you booked at the Pumpkin Patch.
I've avoided Pumpkin Patch. It was Halloween. Do we say...
It's Halloween today. Fine,
What happens tonight is probably some trick-or-treating with my kids.
How many kids you got?
I've got two girls, four and six.
Oh, you're still at the... They're getting old. Well, yeah. They're 16 and 14.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they're now...
I don't even know if they do Halloween, actually. I'm not really sure. They're not with me anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm involved anymore.
So they're probably soon thinking about what... only a couple of years away from uni and...
Yeah, Shay. I mean, my oldest, he's working at Cardiff City. He's like on a... He wants to be a Jose Mourinho. He's doing coaching badges and whatnot already. But he's at A-levels, but he's doing it on the side. So, he's very like...
Cardiff City is another one of our customers.
Oh, there you go.
In the stadium there. And
I'll get him to test you. Like,
so just see how it works at half time. They're not Premier League anymore. We have this phase where I think we lost Leicester City, a customer, they went down. Sheffield United went up. So
you're not taking any credit or any kind of negative credit for that.
No, but we get a point where we can only get so many Premier League customers, and then, one drops down, like Leicester City.
Well, you don't do Liverpool, do you?
No, we did.
If you can do that, that'd be really nice. I'm born and bred, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm Tottenham Hotspur. We do have some readers in there.
Yeah, I don't really like you this year. You need to just get back in your box.
It's early days, but
I love your manager though. He's a great guy.
He's doing an amazing job.
Just shows, doesn't it, that a good personality or a good character can change everything. I know you need good players, obviously, they've all got good players.
Some of these players just didn't look good. So it makes you wonder, you wonder how much impact a manager has, but obviously their culture...
They didn't even want him, did they, that guy?
It definitely wasn't top of the list, but I think that the fact that we didn't recruit a manager for a while, maybe we'd eyed him up a bit early to wait for him to finish at Celtic.
But I think for all businesses listening, those kind of people can change your world, right? Good leader.
Good culture, I think, and people just believing in something. Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of... Yeah, even from your restaurant, if you want it to have really high levels of service, they need to believe that...
Yeah.
Believe in that vision.
I love that. What a great note to end. And if people want to get hold of you and sum up, how do they get hold of you? Can they email you or stalk you on LinkedIn?
luke.beavon@sumup.com.
Perfect.
I don't go on LinkedIn too much because it's just people trying to
sell me stuff. Me.
So you can get me directly on email.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And where are we going to catch you next if you're out and about drumming? But not tonight. Tonight's Halloween. But didn't you say you're doing something?
Friday I'm at Lafayette. But this is coming out in the new year. I think I'm at Fabric in mid-February.
Fabric. One of the girls went to Fabric the other night. She was telling me one of the girls at our office. She said, "Went to Fabric." Anyway, long story.
It's a great club. It's had a tough couple of years.
Yeah, we were going to use it as a venue. We did an awards night for my other company, Atollo, and we were going to use Fabric as the venue, but we ended up somewhere else. But yeah, great venue.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Amazing.
All right, lovely to meet you. Really appreciate you coming in.
No worries,
enjoy the rest of your day. And